It's 8:09 now. Good morning. Well, hundreds, perhaps a couple of thousand, attended a rally last night at Utah State Capitol to support Planned Parenthood of Utah. That after Governor Gary Herbert announced that he would no longer allow state agencies to fund the organization. KPCW's Renee Bodley has more on that.
Governor Herbert made his announcement earlier this month after the Center for Medical Progress, an anti-abortion group, released videos it says shows Planned Parenthood employees talking about selling aborted baby body parts. The executive director of Planned Parenthood Utah, Carrie Galloway, says the videos are propaganda.
This is not their first attempt at undercover videos that are highly edited to discredit Planned Parenthood. And I have to say that if I didn't know the people that were highly edited, I would suspect that they were callous and uncaring too. But I know what they are, and I've seen the long version of the videos and see that they over and over talk about, we don't break any laws, we don't make any money on this. This is a humanitarian effort that women who choose abortion, if they want, can donate, just like anyone can donate their organs on their driver's license. Nobody makes any money in this.
Herbert says the videos were, quote, deeply troubling. He ordered state agencies to stop delivering federal funds to Planned Parenthood. That meant the loss of almost $300,000 to the organization. Planned Parenthood says it uses that money for pregnancy testing, sex education, and STD testing and treatment.
The money that passes through the Department of Health has nothing to do with abortion at all. One is for an infertility prevention program. It is federal CDC money, and it's to address chlamydia, which is a highly contagious STD, which, if goes untreated, can render a woman infertile. I'm in the healthcare business, and our goal is to make sure that people's reproductive health care is addressed so that they can prevent pregnancy when they want to, and they can achieve pregnancy when they want to.
Last night's rally wasn't the first one on this subject. Last week, Governor Herbert's supporters gathered at the state capitol to show their approval of his action to defund Planned Parenthood. State Senator Curtis Bramble, a Republican who represents Utah and Wasatch counties, spoke at the rally. He says he was prompted to participate after he and his wife agreed to share a personal experience.
I talked to my wife before the event, and we decided it was time to disclose some information publicly. She has one kidney. Her kidney shut down during her pregnancy. The urologist, nephrologist, all the specialists told us that we had to abort the child, and we couldn't bring ourselves to take the life of the child. That baby is now a graduate of the University of Utah, a law school. He's married, has two children, and is having a wonderful life. And when I saw the videos of what I perceived was cavalierly talking about body parts from unborn children, that's, to me, very despicable. It's just untenable.
Bramble says even though Planned Parenthood of Utah doesn't provide abortions, they belong to an umbrella organization that does. And Governor Herbert's action should not hurt Utahns looking for health care.
What he said was that these women's health services would be continued. And the reality is Planned Parenthood is not the only organization that can adequately provide needed services. But where Planned Parenthood has gotten crossways is their involvement with abortions. And they're, again, they're rather cavalier and very insensitive culture, it would appear, the whole attitude that they portray.
It appears many Utahns agree with Bramble. A new Utah policy poll of 500 adult Utahns shows 40% of respondents have a very unfavorable opinion of Planned Parenthood. The bulk of those are Republican, with 79% of Utah Republicans having an unfavorable opinion. But conversely, almost that same number, 72% of respondents age 18 to 24, have a favorable opinion of Planned Parenthood. Galloway says she's not surprised.
Because they've actually used Planned Parenthood and know the good services that we provide. We are quality, compassionate healthcare services. And when you ask a question based on bogus videos or a bogus issue, people are going to respond appropriately. I'm not surprised at all.
I'm Renee Bodley, KPCW News.
Hello, Park City. I'm Joe Simmons with Park City High School and the Minor Nation Report. Listen every Monday for the latest in high school sports and activities. The Minor Nation Report is made possible in part by UPS Stores, Rich Fine Realtor, Elliott Work Group, and Miller Orthodontics.
It's 8:15 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. In the studio with me now, Snyderville Basin Planning Commissioner Colin DeFord. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So just a one-item agenda. No one at the public hearing, as the commission considered a change of use for that home savings bank site there at Silver Springs. A vote unanimous to make the change?
Unanimous. I always consider Rick our public hearing person. You know, he's always there. Yes, but it was unanimous to change it. So it was kind of complicated because this was a special exception that was granted by the county council back in January. The home savings bank has been empty, and the new owners were looking to change the uses because their uses were basically just a bank granted by a spa agreement way, way back when it was originally built. And now they have no avenue to change it because there's no spa anymore in that area. So their only avenue was a special exception by the county council. So the county council approved a special exception and said that go out, look for a tenant, and come back and apply for a CUP, and we'll take a look and see if there's any issues with possibly a new tenant.
So the specific use being proposed is for a law office, but the vote from the commission was to allow moderate office use. So does an attorney's office fit into that?
It's right in there perfectly, yeah. So a law office is pretty low impact for a building, and they'd fit perfectly in there.
Yeah. So there are also other categories like intensive office, medical dental office. Are those more intensive?
More intensive. And we felt that as a commission that reading the minutes from the county council back in January, they basically said you go out and look for a tenant in all the four zones of offices, but come back when you have a tenant and then we'll see what the intensive use is. That's the way we really interpreted the council's minutes as a commission. So we felt that they weren't saying that intensive office was necessarily right for this location. They were just more interested in the tenant that the the landowners could bring.
So if a tenant did want another use under these categories, then would that tenant have to come back?
They have to come back. So if they have another tenant that wants to go in there and fits within the moderate office, then they don't need to come back. But if they want something more intensive, like medical, dental, then they need to come back.
Yeah, at one point you were questioning if the building could house like a nightly rental management firm. So where does that fit into the...
I believe that would be intensive. So I just wanted to be clear on what... The property owner wanted us to approve all four office uses, and as a commission, we weren't that comfortable because they don't have to come back, and it's right there in the neighborhood. And so we felt that the intent of the county council was that they wanted a use that was less intensive than the drive-through bank. And if we granted all four zones, then potentially the land or the office owner could go for an intensive use that was even higher than the bank. But we felt comfortable with the office owner, but you never know down the road when they sell, you know, if there's a new owner that comes in and you don't have the same necessarily handshake agreement. So for me, I'm always comfortable just doing what we can on our one shot at the county.
Yeah. Commissioner Greg Glosson wondered if an allowed use would overwhelm the limited parking that's there. So why not add a condition for that?
When we asked staff about moderate office and the parking spaces that was in the code, their parking spaces came out to exactly what they needed for that use. So we felt as a commission that it wasn't necessary. It was pretty much redundant.
Okay. So given that you only had one item on the agenda, does that make you fearful for what's coming up next? I mean, because we just keep hearing about how busy it is.
No, it's always the schedule – you know, it's an ebb and flow in that, you know, a lot of times you look at the long-term schedule and you see things that are coming and applicants, you know, are ready and then they're not. Things get flopped around. So sometimes when you look at a schedule and you feel you're going to be there till 11 in 2 weeks, it plops down to only two items because people aren't ready or they have a problem with their application and things just get moved around.
Yeah, so what is on the calendar then for Planning Commission for the rest of the year, the next 4 months?
Well, I can tell you long term, we have a subcommittee right now that's working on the entitlement issue that we have in the basin. So we have a lot of existing entitlements, maybe in not the best areas. So the county's looking to see what tools we can put inside our county toolbox to help move those entitlements around to areas that are probably better suited for them. So they're in a study phase right now, looking at other communities, what has been successful in similar communities and what has been not so successful, and really trying to come together as a county staff with the attorney's office and the commissioners and planning staff and really come up with some guidelines to come back to the commission in November, I believe, is what they're targeting.
Okay. What about the general plan? Are we just working on, we've got that, now we just work on the development code?
Now we're working on, this is still phase two, so that would be part of phase two, this working on entitlements and just going through the code and cleaning up the code is what currently the staff's working on. And probably it's probably an 18-month process to get through everything.
Yeah, also a discussion with meeting with the Park City Planning Commission. Are any agenda items for that? Or
so that is in the two development directors reaching out stage right now, but it looks like our next meeting possibly could be the second meeting in September could be a joint meeting with Park City and the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. That's what our hopes are, if everybody, so Tuesday in the end of September.
Yeah, but in terms of like what you would discuss, any particulars?
I haven't seen that yet. So that's the two chairs would get together, and so Mike and Nan would get together and talk about what is the hot topic in both areas, and then we'd come together and have a really nice discussion. I really enjoy when we get together because we don't do it that often. We have similar issues, and it's always good to reach across boundaries and just talk about what's kind of hitting each other.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
Welcome back to school.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. Snyderville Basin Planning Commissioner Colin DeFord. It's 8:28 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, as we've reported, hundreds, perhaps even 1,000 or two, attended a rally on the steps of Utah State Capitol yesterday to show their support for Planned Parenthood. Some of those who were there included Annabelle Schoenberg. She's the Education Director for Planned Parenthood. She's in the studio with me, along with certified nurse midwife Daniel Demeter. Lindsay Gordon and Livy Andrini are members of the Teen Council, and Ann Clark is a mom of a Park City High School student. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, Annabelle,
Leslie,
let's start with you. I mean, maybe we can get a little bit of reaction from all of you, just your reaction to the rally. I mean, we're hearing differing numbers. Tribune reporting a couple hundred, Fox 13 reporting 2,000, somewhere in between there?
Oh, I think there was 2,000. We had an incredible turnout. We had people of all ages. We had a wonderful youth showing last night. We had excellent speakers. It was a strong showing that women, men, teenagers feel that Planned Parenthood services are extremely important.
Yeah, well, let's get the girls here, Lindsay and Livy. Again, as I mentioned, members of the Teen Council. You're kind of like the local sex ed, I guess, advisory committee, education committee. I mean, what is it that you do?
So Teen Council, we are run through the education department through Planned Parenthood, and we meet every week for 2 hours and discuss social issues. And our main focus is sexual education, and we can go into schools and teach sexual education classes throughout the state of Utah.
And Livy?
Yeah, the rally last night was just so incredible. Like, just the turnout and the youth population that was there was really amazing. A lot of the Teen Council members and a lot of our friends were there, and there was just a whole section of youth, which I think is what we really seek to do as education. You know, we try to teach people and get them aware, and just having them show up was really amazing.
Yeah. And so, Danielle, as somebody, I mean, makes a living of birthing babies, why did you feel like you needed to be there?
Well, my job is women's health care, all women's health care. Pregnancy and childbirth is a specialty of mine, but I do all women's health care. So it's important to me. It makes my job easier when young women like these two come in and they have more knowledge and they have more idea about what they want about their bodies. I do the same type of education, but I want to support Planned Parenthood because they've always been there. And if you can't, you don't have insurance and you can't come to my office or you can't see a private practitioner, then you really need those services. And I need Planned Parenthood too.
And Anne, why did you think it was important to be there?
1 in 5 American women in this country will use Planned Parenthood at one point or another in their lives. When I was a teenager, that was the first place I went because I did not have the access or the insurance or the support. So luckily, that provided me health, and I didn't have to have, you know, hard decisions to make because we started with prevention through contraception and education.
Yeah. So the genesis of Planned Parenthood's defunding by Governor Herbert, Annabelle, came following a video that's been released to show that the organization apparently is illegally selling fetal tissue for profit. Everyone at Planned Parenthood denies that, of course, but how careful is Planned Parenthood to make certain that those transfers of fetal tissue are legal and actually do require the mother's consent?
So to be clear, Planned Parenthood Association of Utah is not involved in a fetal tissue donation program. And it is true that the current round of attacks on Planned Parenthood initiated due to the release of some videos that were made by a fraudulent organization set up solely to end abortion in our country. And we are trying to respond to these attacks. In Utah, we do not do fetal tissue donation. In fact, it's only done in 2 states in the country. And every investigation that's been conducted so far by a state has found absolutely no wrongdoing. We believe strongly in research. That's how we cure diseases like Parkinson's and AIDS, and tissue donation is a part of that. But it is absolutely done with the consent or with the wishes of the patient in mind. So we follow strict protocols around all tissue donation programs at Planned Parenthoods around the country. In Utah, Planned Parenthood has done absolutely nothing illegal, nor has it around the country.
Yeah. According to your annual report, last year Planned Parenthood performed 1,602 abortions in the state. It provided birth control to some 23,000 patients, as well as breast and testicular screenings to about 25,000 other people. So any idea how that compares, maybe especially the abortion numbers with other states?
Sure. Utah has a relatively low abortion rate. And I think as many stories as we have from our patients, we have stories about people who've come in and got compassionate care and decided to continue their pregnancy. We are really there for women. We want to be the resource they need for what they want, and we want to do it with high standards.
Yeah, but any guesses as to why those 1,600 women needed an abortion? I mean, is it a lack of birth control? Is it a lack of education? Or,
I mean, working in any kind of medical organization, you know that it's every story under the sun, that there is no one single story. And so I think it's important that we remember that the majority of people who have abortions are mothers. And that's something that a lot of people don't think about. And I feel that, you know, when people say very aggressive things about people who pursue an abortion, they're talking about mothers, and they're talking about people who are often doing what they think is right for them at that time or for their family at that time.
Yeah. So has the defunding of Planned Parenthood actually happened?
So no, we have not yet received official notice from Governor Herbert or from a state agency that our education and STI testing contracts will be terminated. When we do, we should have 30 days to respond. So what will be affected are school-based prevention programs using an evidence-based model that reduces teen pregnancy, increases school success, and is in place in 6 locations in Salt Lake County that have very high teen pregnancy rates. We value those relationships very much with those communities and with people in the schools who we've worked so hard with to create that trust in that support. We have said publicly that we intend to continue doing what we do and to keep good on our commitment to the people of Utah.
Livy, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, the biggest thing is that if we want to prevent the abortions that are so, you know, controversial in Utah, we need the education and we need the access to birth control so that these young people and the people who don't necessarily aren't in a place to have a baby can seek treatment or prevention or know how to not get pregnant in the first place. And that's, you know, that's all that Planned Parenthood really wants to do, is so that we can prevent things from going where moms or potential moms don't want them to be.
So we're talking about $300,000. Is that about what the loss would be?
A little less. Mm-hmm. We know the chlamydia testing money. So chlamydia is a very common STI that's very contagious, as Danielle can attest to. Sorry. And the chlamydia testing money is about $75,000 that we have from the state. And then education is just over $100,000. So it's closer to $200 than $300.
Mm-hmm. So where do you cut back then? I mean, if you're $175,000 short in the budget, what goes away?
Well, for one, we're going to be reaching out to the people of Utah to help us with online donations and all kinds of donations to support these critical programs. I can tell you that we've done a portion of our STD testing is funded through state money, and a portion of our education programming is funded through state money. So we will continue to do what more with less and do what we have to do to keep these programs going.
Yeah. And then you two girls were saying that you actually can get into the schools. I mean, we have pretty specific laws that regulate health classes and sex education.
Well, most of our classes are not done specifically through the school. We go to places like the YMCA and the People's Health Clinic to do classes, because it is kind of difficult to actually do the health classes during school hours. It's almost all the time it is after school.
And we have taught at schools like the winter school and private schools like that. And I think what's really important, too, is that we get into the younger grades. And I've done multiple just healthy relationships lessons. You know, it's not all just, you know, the nitty-gritty. It's just teaching kids consent and communication so that they can make decisions for themselves down the road when they're in that position.
Yeah. So do you think you made a difference being there yesterday?
I hope so.
Yes, I hope so.
Having a voice is very important, and seeing all the women and men and children that are affected by this. I mean, if you don't know your options, you don't have any.
A lack of education does not prevent teen pregnancy. When teens are empowered, they understand what their bodies do. They understand what consent is. They understand what a healthy relationship is and what it looks like. That's when we see the teen rates go down. It's not through ignorance and the lack of education.
Yeah. And in terms of those that were protesting, I guess, Planned Parenthood, they showed up last night as well? Handful?
Few. Very few, I saw.
It was a small group of the other side and people who have different views, yes. There was a very small group inside the Capitol, and then a few people were outside.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, again, you're hoping to pick up the lost funding via just
donations.
Word of mouth.
And mm-hmm. To clarify, there's two school districts we're approved right now in, and we're working through the issues here in Park City, but we've been tentatively approved to teach a Know Before You Go lesson to seniors that's going to help them stay safe on college campus or at their job or where they go after high school. And we're really excited to work on that this year in Park City with these amazing group of teens.
Okay. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
The Park City Rotary Club named Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation Director Colin Hilton as this year's Professional Citizen of the Year. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning and congratulations.
Thank you, Leslie.
So the club used to make this kind of as a surprise for the recipient. You obviously knew about it.
A couple of weeks ago, yeah. Yes, but it was a real pleasant surprise.
Well, great. So are you a member of Rotary?
No, I'm just a regular attendee to giving updates on all things happening with our Olympic facilities.
All right. Well, I have to note, good job, though, avoiding the fine that sounded like it was about to be levied on you for
yes,
introducing extreme tubing. Okay, well, so you were recognized for your quiet leadership moving forward with the job that needs to be done. Part of, I think, your biggest challenge was, how are you going to make it work, right? I mean, once the Olympics were over and you had all of this money, now what?
Yes, and that's really been a passion of mine to say, you know, these Olympic facilities cost millions of dollars. And, you know, up until Salt Lake's Games, there really wasn't a lot of thought about what to do after a Games. And I had worked many Olympic Games in Atlanta and World Cup Soccer in Boston and had been a part of putting on these major events, and always a little distressed that a lot of money was spent for a three-week event and not a lot of thought afterward. And here Utah is really setting the model, and it's been really, I feel it's a privilege to be a part of leading a great team of staff that I have, and really making an impact with these Olympic facilities.
Yeah. Well, you had also served as Park City Municipal's kind of economic, was it the
Economic Development Director?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So you kind of like saw a future then for winter sports? And
well, you know, my time here in Park City dates back to 1999 when I came here to help plan for the Salt Lake Organizing Committee, all the activities in the Park City area. And ever from day one, the community was open arms to embracing putting on a Games and being able to be a part of helping guide, you know, the impacts of what a Games and how they have to run at our various venues around town here was a real inspiring. And I that was always what I loved about these big major events was the community rallying around a cause. And doing that, yes, getting to know Toby Ross and Tom Backley about towards the end of the putting on the Games, they invited me to be a part of helping Park City be more than just a known for a ski town in winter. And so it was really fun to spend 4 years being a part of a team of folks looking at expanding to a year-round destination community here.
Now, when you got involved in the Salt Lake Olympics, I mean, you had mentioned at Rotary, of course, we had 9/11 just happen, but there were other challenges too, I'm guessing, just with the whole bid scandal and anything else?
Yeah, well, and that's, you know, Utah really shed light on all of the shenanigans that were happening in the Olympic world and made some changes. And I was a part of the group that came in to help be very transparent and put on a Games in the most effective and supportive way for how an organizing committee does this. And there was a ton of great work that went in. Had some great people here, obviously, that were leaders in getting not only the Games on, but getting the original facilities built of the Utah Winter Sports Park, as it was named there. And, you know, people like Charlie Winsor, who helped in the construction of that, Miles and Frank Bell, and, you know, everybody really made these facilities work. And I was just very happy to come in and be able to be a part of a team to make the Olympics successful.
Yeah, certainly we have seen cases where Olympic host cities have kind of found themselves in a financial hole after an Olympics game, just and not knowing what to do with the facilities. You came on to the foundation here and really worked to make it a viable living and profitable venture.
Yes, well, I wouldn't call it profitable. It's still a subsidized endeavor, but that is the big challenge. These Olympic facilities are very high labor, high energy cost facilities, and they won't break even. They need to be subsidized. And thankfully, from the 2002 Games, we had a profit that was put into an investment portfolio, and the earnings from that allow us to subsidize the operations and the programs at the Olympic Park and the Olympic Oval down in Salt Lake. And so, yeah, the right after the Games, there was a bit of a glow and a hemorrhaging of funds, and I was kind of brought in to help put a business sense as well as put an impact of what we're doing and using these facilities for community good.
Yeah. I mean, at one point, we really thought we were just going to blow through those legacy funds just because of the expense of maintaining very expensive venues. Huh?
Yes, and that's really the trade-off. Our foundation is about growing Winter Olympic sport in the state of Utah, and we were having the doors open to the facilities, but there wasn't a real emphasis to engaging participants in winter sport, and that's really been a big push that I did in the first several years from about 06 to 2010. And beyond that, balancing the efficiencies and finding new revenue sources to allow the financials to work. And today, I'm proudly able to say we're four times busier in the number of participants we have and the amount of uses that we're doing, all ages, all abilities, special emphasis on youth, and that there's something for everybody. And our financial situation allows us to do this as a public nonprofit. We're a 501c3, and we are not taking taxpayer funds to run these very expensive facilities.
Yeah. So are you at risk, though, of spending that legacy fund or spending down that legacy fund?
Where the risk is we cover that operating subsidy and have about half the funds to maintain the facilities at a world-class level. So as you well know, we this past year had one of the first major renovations of the facility. So as they age and we need to have the expensive elements maintained, we have to fundraise for them. And roughly just like the pool project, the new Spence Eccles Olympic Freestyle Pool, we put in $1 million of our endowment funds. Spence Eccles put in a challenge grant for a second million, and we fundraise for a third million. And I think that is really symbolic of how we're going to creatively keep these Olympic facilities at a world-class level and keep them very active.
Yeah. So do we have enough people that want to ride a zip line or do extreme tubing to...
Yeah, that has been terrific, and that's been sort of our multi-prong effort to raise new revenues through new ways. The public activity revenue side has been double-digit increases each of the last 5 years. So the zip lines, public bobsled rides, adventure courses, and now the new extreme tubing, a lot of corporate group, catered dinner and a show, that is really where we are raising a lot of new revenues that help offset the cost of our sport programs.
I was going to guess that the park is probably Park City's most visited attraction outside of our ski resorts. I mean, what kind of numbers are we seeing?
We're probably at about 500,000 uses a year going right now. And again, one of the favorite things that I reflect on, for a winter Olympic training site, we're actually busier in the summertime than our winter offerings. And that's really because we have a lot of outdoor activities for the public in the summertime. We have them in winter, but just not as much, and we're working on that. But the fun for me has been creating a team of folks, and I've got an awesome team at the park headed up by Mark Norman and Carla Knox and Sandy and Jennifer, and it's just been awesome to be able to. I do a lot less on the day-to-day, and I'm working on these larger projects as we go forward.
So real quick on the Olympic front, I know that's something you had been working on in terms of Salt Lake hosting another Olympic Games. Is that moving forward?
So there's about a dozen of us that around the state that keep a handle on positioning Utah for one day when we're given the chance to host a Games. And, yes, it's been very active discussions in the last year. And, you know, we hold a position that we stand ready, willing, and able when the time is right. And right now, the U.S. Olympic Committee is focused on a summer bid. I expect very shortly they'll name L.A. as their candidate for 2024. But that will be known in 2017. And if that's not successful, we're on the clock, if you will. And that is exciting to me because perhaps now the Olympic movement might think about going back to places that have well-maintained infrastructure and that doesn't cost a lot to bring a Games back and to take it to a place that really embraces the ideals of these Olympic Games and the Olympic movement. And that's where I think Utah is, and Park City in particular, is very unique in this space.
So we'd be shooting for the 2026 if LA doesn't get nominated
right.
for 2024.
That's correct.
Okay, anything else you wanted to mention?
Just that very appreciative of the Rotary and all of those who have been a part in this community to support what we're doing up at the Olympic Park. My times at the city was so much fun to put on getting the new ice rink in Quinn's Junction together. And I'm kind of feeling like one of those older folks in town now. We're seeing library renovations again and expansions of high schools and all of that. But very appreciative of everybody's support over the past 10-plus years that I've been up here.
Again, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's Colin Hilton, the Park City Rotary Club's Professional Citizen of the Year. KPCW News Time now, 8:53. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. The Park City Area Home Builders Association presents the annual Showcase of Homes. It opens this week and runs through Labor Day. In the studio with details, the director of the association, Jerry Strand, along with its president, Matt Russell. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So we'll start with you, Jerry. Just, again, the dates.
Yes, starts this weekend, Friday, actually, 2 o'clock, the 28th. And so it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then Labor Day weekend runs Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, 4 days.
Okay, and the hours?
The hours Friday and Saturday are 2 to 8, and then the rest of the hours, days are 10 to 6 p.m.
Okay, and tickets are being sold online then? Is that the best way to do it?
Yes, online is the best, pcshowcaseofhomes.com. We do have two locations that will be selling tickets. One is right behind the visitor center out at Kimball Junction, and the other one is in Heber in the Zions Bank parking lot. That's the only place that we'll be selling tickets.
All right. And then people, what, get a map and know where to go?
Yep. We have magazines placed throughout Park City. Most of the hotels have them. The visitor center, of course, they can come into our office and pick one up. During the showcase, all of the homes will have the magazines and the map as well.
All right. So why does the association do this every year? It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. And it's for our builders. It's for our members to showcase their product. Matt Russell has a beautiful house in the showcase this year out in Victory Ranch. And it's a good way for the customers to meet the builders and get new design ideas and see what's, you know, the latest and greatest in the building industry.
Yeah. And how do you choose the homes? Just volunteers or?
They put in an application. And then we have a committee that goes through the applications and decide, you know, which houses we'd like to have a part of the showcase.
All right. So, Matt, we'll get you up to that microphone. So you've got a home that you built at Victory Ranch?
We do, yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the building trends. I mean, because what we're kind of hearing is that we're moving away from that Mountain Lodge look and going towards what?
Well, it's kind of a mix. A lot of people from out of state still want to come and have a mountain feel, but they want a more contemporary look. A lot of people are calling it a mountain modern or a mountain contemporary home.
Right.
But it really kind of, what a lot of people want now is a lot more open floor plan. Big windows, they want to take advantage of the great views that we have here in Park City and utilize a lot of the new technologies that home building has to offer as well.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about that, the energy efficiencies, I mean, smart controls, yeah. Is that where we're headed?
Yeah, a lot of people love that. It makes a lot of sense. From the standpoint of one from energy efficiency, and also it makes it very usable for someone who's out of state to be able to maybe monitor their home, control their home, prepare their home for when they arrive or when they leave, and just make it really comfortable for someone who's not maybe there all the time.
Yeah, well, we're hearing, too, that it's not just for the luxury homes, that it's really come down onto a kind of a mass.
It really has. In fact, we see that on a lot of the homes that a lot of the long-term locals have been here that really want to put on solar or any sort of system that can actually save energy and help us kind of with our environment here and to save us here. Really some great systems with hot water, with electricity, all of that type of stuff makes the home much more user-friendly.
Well, since kitchens are probably the most important and used room in a home, what are new trends there?
Well, people... I think the biggest trend that we see right now is kitchens are now becoming the central point of a house. That's where people really want to meet. Instead of having a formal living room or a family room, a lot of these houses now are being focused around a great room, which is centered around the kitchen. That's where we like to entertain. That's where we like to sit and eat and talk and drink and share, you know, stories of the weekend and what we did. And so that's kind of what we see the most is that the kitchen is becoming not a place that's kind of hidden in the back, but it's the central feature of the house, where people can, like I said, can meet there and laugh and joke and be with each other as you're cooking and drinking.
Stainless steel, the finish of choice?
It still is, yep. Stainless steel, we do a lot of overlays where people will integrate it into the cabinet. So just a really clean look as you walk in, you almost can't see some of the appliances with the cabinet overlays.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you quickly about this. The Home Builders Association recently attended a county council meeting to speak against the ban on wood-burning appliances. How important are wood-burning fireplaces in today's homes?
Well, there's two reasons. One, a lot of people like the wood-burning fireplaces because of the look and the feel that it offers. I mean, to be in a mountain setting and to have a fire going, really adds an element to your home. Some people like it from the standpoint of safety, I guess, if you want to say that. If the power goes out or if their house is cold or if something was to go wrong, they have that backup heat source. A lot of people like that. And so that's been a challenge that that we want. And I know we've got some great clients that they really like it for that reason. They like the fact that they can warm their house on days that are a little bit extra cold, that they can monitor their heat flow in their home.
Yeah, so do you see this being a detriment, I mean, to building?
I think I don't know if it's a detriment to building. I think the challenge and the reason that we as an HBA wanted to go to the county council is there were some maybe not totally proven facts that were shared, and we just want to make sure. I think we as builders are as concerned about where we work and where we live as well. Park City is a beautiful place. We want to protect it, but we all also want to make sure that things are looked at in all angles and that we're protected as builders as well to make sure that we can provide for our clients what needs that they have.
Yeah. So I guess you're looking forward to hearing what kind of trade or system will happen, I guess, in the future here.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. Again, Jerry, that people can get tickets to the Homeowners Association home?
Yes. Best place is the website, pcshowcaseofhomes.com. And feel free to call our office at 435-645-9363 as well.
Okay. Anything else?
Thanks for having us.
No, thank you very much.
All right. Hey, thank you. It's Jerry Strand and Matt Russell with the Park City Area Home Builders Association. News time now, 9 o'clock.